every single Reformed congregation in North America. 90% of the congregations are refusing to deal with this for a variety of reasons maybe we'll talk about. But we're also finding that it is significantly impacting membership because in many congregations and in many communities, my generation, the first stage baby boomers, are leaving congregations because basically there's nothing there for us. In many cases, they're pediatric, and in many cases, they really refuse or don't want to deal with some of the significant substantive issues that are now taking place within our lives. One of the most, if not the most, requested workshop that I do now as a result of the Sacred Aging Project, which has about six or seven components, is on this issue of caregiving, because I don't know of any congregation in the Union that is not being impacted membership-wise by what we're talking about. And as I told my class in Sacred Aging at HUC, because I teach this on Thursday mornings at the college in New York, to future rabbis, cantors, and educators, and communal service workers, that just about every person in the room, even though most, the majority of those 14 students are in their 20s and early 30s, but them and their congregants will be impacted by this issue. So we're going to talk a little bit about a few things about caregiving. June, I need a realistic, not a rabbi, but a realistic time frame of when you want these people out of here, because that will determine how quickly I talk.
Try for
11:30. Okay.
I'm a little
over. No. I'm very flexible. I worked at Camp Harlem for many, many years, and flexibility is our middle name.
But they have to leave.
No. Believe me, all of us are used to having congregants walk out on us. Or who? It's time to go. So here we go. This study guide is going to take us through a variety of things, but first some generalizations. I cannot resist also putting on my program hat. And so part of this is going to be dialogue. Here's the thing when I teach, the ground rules when I teach, there's no ground rule. So if you have a question, raise your hand. We're not going to have a formal question and answer period. But this stuff is really very sensitive. It is very personal. And at the risk of full disclosure, I'm doing this myself. I'm living this myself. If you don't believe me, you can call my mother, who probably is on the phone trying to find out where I am now. So, number two, generalization. We do not use the term... Can you all hear me?
Yeah.
Can everybody hear me okay? Because I don't want to... if somebody has some difficulty hearing, I'll use the mic. But I have trouble standing in one place. For a variety of reasons. So if it's okay with you, I'll probably meander around a little bit. But if it gets up to be a problem, let me know. For a variety of reasons, you don't have to. Yeah, but nobody's going to come anymore. They're worried about spring training. Thank God. For a variety of reasons, we do not use the term sandwich generation in our work. We use now the term club sandwich generation. And here's the reason why. Because multi-generational caregiving is no longer out of the ordinary. For example, some of you may know this. Some of you in this room may be living it. It is no longer unusual for a 64-year-old man or woman to be caring for his 93-year-old mother, while at the same time being very involved with the lives and sometimes caregiving for my children, who may be in their 20s and 30s, and at the same time, if you're lucky enough to live in the neighborhood or the same city, sometimes 2 or 3 days a week driving carpool for your 8 or 9-year-old grandchildren. All at the same time, as you're stuck on the Schuylkill Expressway, saying to yourself, wait a minute! They said that this was supposed to be my time. This was supposed to be the time when everything would be nice and easy and I'd be able to relax and enjoy life. Why am I working harder than ever before and seemingly caught in the middle of several layers? Hence the term club sandwich generation. Some of you may be living that. I guarantee you, some of you know people who are living that. We're going to try to explore this morning what Judaism has to say about this issue of caregiving. It has a lot to say. We're going to focus in a little bit on aging parents, but we're also cognizant of the fact that the concept of caregiving may include spouses, other relatives, and God forbid, children. We want to explore how we can give guidance from the tradition, and I also want to point out some hopefully potential ideas that I'll have to save it for, because I just got my opening day tickets. I have to save strength for April 5th at 8 o'clock. The next Effiana moment. It's so much fun to work in the New York office. I haven't seen a Yankee or Met fan since last October. They just all come by my office. And it's all festooned with Philly stuff. It's great. They just run away. It's so much fun. And some of you here know me for a few years. If I start digressing into baseball, just remind me not to do that. I will also try to put on my program hat, because one of my jobs is working for the union, which means I'm responsible to you. It's to try to alert you to some of the ways that you can actively, for no money, get involved support-wise with the congregation. This congregation, I know for many, many years, has a proud history of involvement, of social justice, of social action. I know during the time I was a regional director, it was one of the leading congregations in my entire region in the area of social justice. I have no reason to think that situation has changed. So there are a variety of things that you can do in this congregation to respond to some of these needs. One of the first ones is to, as a result of this program, I hope that you will consider developing out of this congregation an ombudsperson or patient advocate position, a volunteer position who could work with your rabbi, your administrator, your religious school director, so that when people from the congregation come to these people with concerns about health issues, moving facilities, placement issues. Most of my colleagues, including me, are not experts in this. You have a wealth of spiritual capital sitting in this congregation, sitting in this room right now. Make use of them. Ask one or two of them to become ombudspeople, to work with families, to guide them through this whole issue of filling out insurance forms, determining which is perhaps the best placement, assisted living or life care facility, or how do you move somebody from Boca Raton back to Gladwin when they have to do that. This is a terribly challenging issue, and most of us are not prepared to do this. Most of us are not. And it's a responsibility putting on our caring community hat of the congregation to take care of its own members. Yes, there are facilities and resources in the community like Jewish Family Service, but my goal is to also have in each congregation somebody in the congregation to say, here, we're a member of the same congregational family. Let's walk you through the morass of forms, and we'll give you references and referrals in the community. We also want to talk to you and mention to you about the whole health and wellness program. We have some of the stuff that we've created in my department out of our health and wellness project. These are congregational and personal health audits that go along with the development of a congregational nurse or congregational health worker program. These are all available on our website, and I'm going to leave these here for you as well. Also on your tables, in addition to the Art of Caregiving study guides, will also be a couple of little cards about a Sacred Aging Works website that I created specifically to talk about issues of Judaism and aging from a whole variety of perspectives, including some of the rituals that June was talking about. On there now is the ritual for the removal of a wedding ring after the year of mourning is over. And we're working on a whole bunch of other exciting things. Okay, so if you will open your study guides to page 1, let me explain to you the background here. There There has been a tremendous amount of research in the whole issue of caregiving as the baby boomers now enter their early and mid-60s. So these two pages are a whole raft of statistics. We're not going to read through all of them, don't worry. But I just want to point out some of these things. These are taken from government statistics, Jewish statistics, National Alliance of Caregiving statistics. We culled through a whole bunch of things, and we try to put some things in a cohesive manner. 50 million people provide care. They've actually understood what a typical caregiver is in the United States of America. It's a woman in her late 40s caring for a widowed mother who does not live with her. This caregiver is married and employed. About 60% of caregivers are women. In every family, there is usually a designated caregiver. And here's something else we've learned in the project. Proximity to the person needing care is no necessary guarantee that that person will be the caregiver. You may know some scenarios like this. We work with too many situations where perhaps mom needs care, sister number two is living a mile away, okay, in Wynwood. Sister number three lives in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. But her role in the family system has always been the caregiver. And so when sister who lives in Wynwood, mom who lives in Gladwin, and sister who lives in Lawrenceville calls up sister who lives in Wynwood and say, look, you're only 5 miles from mom, and I'm very busy. And you know, she really relates to you better. Distance and proximity and closeness does not necessarily guarantee that person is the caregiver. This is one of the things we've learned, for those of you in the mental health field, and I know Beth David has a few, the psychodynamics of caregiving often reflect the psychodynamics of the family system of people who've grown, how they've grown up. In other words, where you were in the family system when you were a child and an adolescent are reflected back forward when people are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. Some of the same family dynamics take place. And if you line up every rabbi here and say, have you ever had this conversation, especially when you're doing marriage or wedding preparation and how family systems get played out, everyone's going to say, of course. Including our own families, by the way. So that's not true. And please note that the majority, the designated caregiver in many families is usually a woman. Where this flips around is like a situation in my case. I'm an only child. So no matter where I go, I get the call. Some of you may know only children, and there's a double, you know. And we've had this as late as last week when I was doing some work in Detroit for a couple of the congregations in Detroit, and then we're sitting around a table and saying, oh, you're an only, that's really lucky. I said, no, I really wish I had a brother or a sister to share the burden. And they invariably say, no, you really don't know what you're talking about. Sometimes it's not. It's more of a burden to have to negotiate brothers and sisters. 30% of family caregivers caring for older, oh, by the way, yes, there are some typos here. I did this myself. Please don't write a nasty letter to the reform movement. A, they don't care. And B, my daughter tells me there's something on the computer that's called spell check, but I haven't figured out where it is. 30% of family caregivers from older adults are age 65 or over. This is one of the things that's very, very fascinating is changing. Because of the longevity revolution, there's a lot of caregivers who are my age and older, caring for, Eddie and I were just talking about this, but caring for moms or dads in their 90s and 100s. There's a whole vertical reassignment of caregiving right now. That's why we use the club sandwich thing. Because people are living longer, it's not unusual, by the way, for grandchildren to be involved in the caring of grandparents. I mean, my son is 35, my daughter's 28. They are actively involved as much as they can in supporting care of my mom, who's 93. You have this vertical, this extended lifespan, which is allowing more people to be involved in caregiving. It's a fascinating, and this is new. This is relatively new as we're living longer. 70% of family caregivers are providing 40 hours of care a week. Look at the one before that. The potential generational storm as us, baby boomers, start to qualify for our entitlement, Social Security and Medicare, and a decline in the number of workers to fund these. Here's one of the great social justice issues that if you're not involved in major programming in care in healthcare reform, this is affecting everybody in this congregation. Post-World War II, there was approximately 7 workers to fund my retirement. Right now, we're approaching 2. So you can go to your kids and say, I want to thank you right now that in the next 20, 30, 35, 40 years, you're going to maybe be paying 30 to 40% of your take-home pay to be taxed so that I can play golf. I said that to my son a couple of years ago, and he responded lovingly with a 2-word answer. It was not go flyers. This next one is very important. The need for family caregivers will increase in the coming years. People over 65 are expected to increase at a 2.3% rate, but the number of family members available to care for them will only increase at less than 1% rate because they're having less children. This is especially true in the Jewish community, where we're under replacement level. In coming decades, the reality that this is impacting now, elder care issues will replace child care issues as a major family crisis. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, hi. How are you? I'm fine. Good to see you. Oh,
I'm not going to sing, don't worry. This is happening in many of the families in Beth David right now. What are we going to do about that? As replaced, how are we going to get the babysitter? It's a very fascinating shift in demographics. Women who family caregivers are 2.5 times more likely than non-caregivers to live in poverty. There's an economic implication here. You all know, some of you know family systems where the health of the caregiver is very, very important. If you do nothing else, but on the health and wellness thing, I constantly remind people that if you're a caregiver, you have a primary responsibility to take care of your own health because you're of no value if you're sick. That the stress and strain of caregiving, some of you know this for a fact personally, the stress and strain of caregiving can get to your health and can really impact you. There's a whole series of studies here on the economic implication of how many millions and millions of dollars are lost in time. In these scenarios of caregiving, which are now quite real and last perhaps for years, where is the sacred in all this? How can churches, synagogues, mosques, chaplaincy, religious institutions, and communities provide a sense of support, caring, and meaning? That's the goal of the questions I raised with you.